U.S. Farmers and Ranchers in Action connects you to the leading minds in agriculture. Join Farm Food and Facts host Joanna Guza to explore the latest in sustainable food, fuel, fiber, and more across the value chain.
It is great to be here with you on Farm Food Facts, thanks to the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers in Action. I am your new host, Joanna Guza, located in America's Dairyland. We are excited to connect you to the leading minds in agriculture on a regular basis. Today, our focus is on the World Initiative for Soy and Human Health, or also known as WISH. It was established 20 years ago by the American Soybean Association. WISH is the catalyst for trade in developing and emerging markets. They track trends in protein demand, foster business development, and serve as the connection of businesses and partners across the global market system. Today, we're going to focus specifically on the protein gap in developing and emerging markets and how WISH is building markets around the world. Our guest today is Gina Perry. She's the executive director of the WISH program, and we're going to dive right into this topic. Gina, can you share more about the protein gap in developing and emerging markets?
Sure. WISH works in developing and emerging markets to create agricultural value chains that leads to lasting demand for U.S. soy. We do this through the improvement of health, nutrition, and food security. In that food security realm, we address what's known as a protein gap. So that basically means that there's more protein being demanded than what's produced locally. So as income rises, as people want to consume more protein, whether that's through animals, poultry, eggs, fish, or having more protein in other human foods and beverages, that we looked to soy to help close that protein gap.
And we're not even just talking about human nutrition, it's, you know, animals as well. You mentioned fish and poultry. What has been the recent target market or area and why?
So WISH works in 28 countries across the world, Latin America, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Asia. We focus within different sectors and different countries, depending on the opportunity. Some places like in Sub-Saharan Africa, we may work in the human food, poultry, and aquaculture space if that opportunity exists. In Latin America, we are only working in the human food space. The U.S. Soybean Export Council will work in those other sectors, but we really look at where there's an opportunity for growth and the maturity of that market sector as to where we work. We've had a lot of focus in East and West Africa. Most recently, we've expanded into Southern Africa, looking at aquaculture as well as poultry. Also have done a lot of work in Cambodia on the aquaculture industry. More recently, have looked at moving into Kazakhstan. There's a growing demand for poultry feed there. It's a new market for us.
What was the driving factor to look at those locations versus, you know, another part of the world?
Right. We have a lot of different information that comes in. We talk to USDA and their Foreign Ag Service offices around the world, do our own market assessments. Maybe we think that a certain country or sector or region has, you know, an opportunity. We'll do it a market assessment, see where that opportunity exists, what the challenges are. And then we look for funding to kind of address those market challenges and see where we can provide those technical resources and training. So sometimes it works out. Sometimes we find a market that's not quite ready for investment. Other times we see where we can jump right in and start connecting the dots and resources to entrepreneurs and companies that are in those markets.
Right. A lot of logistics that go into that and making those things happen. And we're going to dive into some of those specifics of how Gina and the WISH group, you know, try to build those different markets around the world. You know, I have a dairy background. Is WISH working with other agricultural commodities to help on those protein gaps?
So we have expanded. We've always worked with different entities, whether they're U.S.-based or in the countries in which we work. We're constantly having conversations with other organizations, with other companies that are working towards a common goal. How can we find synergies to help us work together? WISH is really good at what we do, but we're also not experts in everything. So finding other organizations that can complement the work we're doing. Historically, we've worked really well with U.S. Grains Council. Obviously, on the feed side, they're doing a lot of work with feed internationally, but we're also looking at other corporations and businesses that we can work with. Adesia Nutrition is a good example of that. They are based in Rhode Island, and they make ready-to-use therapeutic foods and supplemental foods to treat acute malnutrition. We connected with them 2 years ago, and they use U.S. soy in their product. They also use dairy, corn, peanuts from U.S. producers. So we have been working with them on further research. See this as a way to get U.S. soy into countries that, you know, wouldn't exist otherwise, because they're shipping their product into over 70 countries around the world.
Can you speak to why the work that you do is a win-win for farmers?
So U.S. farmers are producing a sustainable, reliable, high-quality crop. And there's a lot of challenges that exist around the world when it comes to food security. So through the work that we're doing, as well as many other organizations, we're able to get that high quality, nutritious crop, whether it's through feed or through isolates or concentrates and into human food around the world. So this creates new markets for U.S. farmers. And it also helps address those food security challenges that exist around the world.
And now we're going to dive into, you know, how does Wish build these markets, which is really interesting to me. Gina, can you walk us through how do you go about building different markets around the world?
Right. So I mentioned kind of our first step of a market assessment. Once we pass that step and decide to invest in a market, we work through state and national soy checkoff funding, as well as USDA funding. They have traditional market development funding, as well as non-traditional, which are more development style, like their Food for Progress program. And then we identify entities, both public, private partnerships, as well as working with government to help build a full value chain approach. So oftentimes we work with local entrepreneurs and companies that have identified a challenge in their market, and then we help connect technical resources, training to them so that they can provide a local solution for that challenge. Every key partner and strategic partner we work with is different because they have different needs. They are at different levels of maturity within their own company and their, you know, market sector. So we make sure that we're providing sustainable solutions for them and solutions that help really meet that challenge. So each approach is unique. And I'll use Cambodia as an example. So we recently, 5 years ago, implemented a USDA Food for Progress aquaculture project there. And that is your more traditional development style funding, a lot of capacity building, but it was focused on building up the local aquaculture value chain. So right now and previously, a lot of fish was imported from Vietnam, and Cambodia wanted to make sure that they could produce enough fish to feed their own population. USDA invested funding to look at how to produce more efficiently, new technologies that can be introduced, connecting those within the value chain, so from producers to aggregators to those in the market, also working with consumers to educate them on how, you know, locally produced Cambodian fish is safe and affordable. And then we also worked on building an association, so the Cambodian Aquaculturist Association. As part of a 100-year-old association, the ASA, we know the value that associations play in developing agricultural value chains. The CAA has grown to over 900 members that represent producers, feed input suppliers, pretty much anyone across the value chain. And they have built a really great relationship with the Ministry of Aquaculture and providing, you know, policy and educational feedback that will help grow their value chain. So we see this as a sustainability measure for this project. Generally, these projects are only 5 years. We actually got a 2-year merit-based extension for the project. So we hope that once the project funding ends, the CAA is able to help carry on the technical training and the education piece of that. Alongside the Food for Progress, we've also been able to leverage national and state checkoff funding, as well as some other USDA funding to complement that work that we're doing. So we see that there's new technology that's ready to be introduced into Cambodia, like floating in-pond raceway systems that helps contain the fish, and they're able to produce more in a concentrated area and able to better monitor the feed. And so we've been able to leverage other funding to implement those type of technologies alongside the Food for Progress.
Gina, in just a few minutes, you told us a lot. What's the timeline? So once you find that, hey, this is an area we're going to work with, is it a year? What's the timeline with developing and getting from start to finish and making sure it's a success?
Well, that's a great question because there's not a standard answer. It really just depends on the value chain itself. There's a lot of challenges that exist in developing emerging markets, whether it's access to capital, infrastructure, cold chains, you know, development, access to better feed and management practices. So we're really the long-term development arm of U.S. soy, meaning that we're in it for the long haul. Sometimes market segments take 5, 10, 15 years to really get to a point where they're consistently importing U.S. soy. And a lot of it is that our markets are extremely price sensitive. So price is really what drives purchasing decisions. And so that's something that we help, you know, if we can help guide those companies on better management practices and helping improve their bottom line, then they're more able to economically import U.S. soy that's higher quality, but often, you know, costs a little bit more. So it really just depends on the market sector. But we know that continued investment and relationship building in these markets will help drive the creation of these value chains.
And like you mentioned, all these markets have different challenges. Is there any common challenges that you have noticed?
Well, I think, like I mentioned, the price sensitivity piece of it is a huge challenge across the world. And then logistically, in some places, it's easier and quicker to get soy from maybe South America than it is from the U.S. We also see that access to finance is a really big challenge, more so in sub-Saharan Africa, but it exists elsewhere, especially relative to, you know, interest rates in the U.S. In West Africa, a loan interest rate can be anywhere from 30 to 40%. So it just doesn't, the math doesn't add up when you start doing it. And so that's something, you know, I think a lot of people are looking at that challenge because it not only affects agriculture, it affects, you know, all economic growth. And so that's been a huge challenge. And then lack of cold storage as well. So being able to have, you know, a consistent cold storage for fish or for poultry and, you know, high quality food safety practices, that's also been a challenge, but something that we also work on throughout all of our markets.
Right. And you need a diverse team to be doing all those different things to help develop markets. From your experience in the last 5 years, what has been the main focus and where has most of your time been spent?
So when WISH was founded over 20 years ago, there was a large focus on the human food side, human health. And while we still focus on that, especially through food security, we've always worked in food security, but it's more of a hot topic now. In the last probably 7 to 9 years, we've shifted into feed as well, because there's been, you know, a growing demand for animal protein, poultry, aquaculture, swine. And so that's been a really big focus for us. Aquaculture has been a really big focus. So fish is already a culturally appropriate consumed protein source across much of the world. So it's not like we're trying to introduce, you know, tofu into Southern Africa. People are already eating fish. And, you know, because of the dwindling stocks and wild caught, you know, people see aquaculture as kind of a more sustainable production practice. So we recently updated our global aquaculture strategy to make sure that we're, you know, capturing the opportunity there and implementing aquaculture growth in a way that is sustainable and that makes sense based on the location. So, you know, some countries we may implement certain technologies while we know other markets aren't quite ready for that. So what is the next technology we can introduce there to make sure that we're helping them grow their value chain and addressing kind of those local challenges? So yeah, aquaculture has been a really big focus as well as feed. And so we've spent a lot of time in West Africa and East Africa, and like I said, in Cambodia, and then branching out more into other Asian markets as well.
Well, Gina, you are a very busy lady. We are talking with Gina Perry. She's the executive director of the World Initiative for Soy and Human Health, also known as WISH. Last question as we wrap up this episode, what trends will you be keeping an eye on and any recommendations on what farmers should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, so I think population growth, I mean, we saw the world surpass a new population number back in November, but we're seeing a lot of that growth happening in sub-Saharan Africa. There's going to be a record number of youth on the continent by 2050, and I'm sure probably now it's going to be before that. Over half the population is going to be under 18 on the continent. So that's a lot of young, hopefully future agriculturalists that are wanting to invest their careers into some part of the value chain. But it's also a lot more mouths to feed and a lot more protein being demanded. We're also seeing overall, you know, incomes are rising. And typically as income rises, people start demanding more protein, whether that's through animals or other plant-based alternatives. We're seeing a lot of investment into human food and beverages in Latin America with isolates and concentrates. So that seems to be a growing area. And I mentioned aquaculture. Aquaculture continues to grow exponentially around the world. And I think farmers just need to understand that there is opportunity in a lot of these markets that aren't as mature, but it is going to take a little bit longer. You're not going to see immediate results, you know, tomorrow or next year, but know that there are people that understand the value of U.S. soy and know that it's high quality, and that we're working to help build their capacity and their businesses and their bottom line so that they're, you know, economically available to import U.S. soy in the future.
Right. We've heard so much dialogue on a global market, and U.S. farmers are definitely a player in that game. And it's great that we have programs like WISH that are helping us get into these different areas so that what we do really good here in the United States, we can share that around the world. If you want to learn more about the World Initiative for Soy and Human Health, head on over to WISH, WISHH.org. You can also follow WISH on YouTube at WISH Soybeans. We'll put a link in the description so it's really easy for you to access. We also invite you to subscribe to Farm Food Facts as we keep you connected to the leading minds like Gina in agriculture. We appreciate you and your time for listening. I'm Joanna Guza for Farm Food Facts.